Welcome to Coaching the Coach, brought to you by the Upstate Performance Project. And now your host, Pete Townley. Welcome back, everybody. As you can tell, yes, I am back in the car for another mobile episode. This time I'm on my way back from Kansas. So, 2 days ago, episode 25, we talked about in-season programming tips, how to program for the in-season, a couple different variations. Again, there's never a one-size-fits-all to anything, but today, I wanted to talk about, continuing with programming, I want to talk about three things that I think are going to make any program successful. And I think, again, there's so many different ways to skin a cat. There's so many different programs out there for different scenarios, different things. There's not one that's going to be the best. So there have to be some overlying things that if you do, no matter what program you run, you should be successful. To a certain degree, of course. I'm not going to get my power lifter stronger numbers by only doing yoga. Should they do yoga? Absolutely. But you get the idea. So let's just jump right in. So the first thing that I want to talk about, and I think it's the most important thing for anything, is consistency. So that should be fairly self-explanatory. However, one of the things that we find all the time, there's two variations here with consistency that I want to talk about. One is the concept of program hopping. Whether it's your clients or even you, reading articles, research articles or magazines or books or going to seminars and hearing other, opinions. It's program hopping. Once you hear something that sounds good, so you're halfway through an 8-week program, you're like, ooh, this sounds cool, I'm gonna try this. And so you abandon what you're doing and you hop into this 8-week program, or this new 8-week program. And it may be a better program fundamentally, but again, if you then find something else and you don't finish it, and you move on to the next one without finishing a program, then again, you're never gonna get the full benefit of whatever the promises of said program was. And I think that's fairly self-explanatory and fairly obvious, but we see it all the time. And we see it a lot with trainers because we do read a lot and we do, talk to other colleagues and learn about these things because it is our job to educate ourselves. And that's going to come on later on down the road. Number one here and number three are tied closely together. But being consistent in what you do, that means if I start something with a client, I'm going to finish that program with the client. It may not be their most favorite phase that they're ever going to go through, but they're paying me to trust that I know what I'm doing and that I'm going to get them where they want to go. Now, if they don't get the results and it's a crummy program on my part, guess what? They're probably not going to re-sign with me. They're going to move on. And obviously, we don't want that to happen. So it behooves you, the trainer, to make sure that they get results. And if you program hop and if you change things around too much, they're never going to see steady progress. And the progress may be a little different at first. It may be a little slower. But if you have a 4, 8, 12-week program in mind that you know where they're going to be at week 12, and you don't really care where they are at week 4. I mean, you care, but you don't want them to be getting on the scale every day or trying to max out every day to test their strength. It's that journey to week 12 that you know is going to get them their results. And so now someone might say, well, what if they don't like what you program? What if they're not interested in what you're doing? Well, to a certain degree, yes, you can maybe edit, change an exercise or two, or if your goal is hypertrophy, there's different ways to program hypertrophy. So again, that's one way to, you know, to look at it. You might say, okay, well, I still want to be in a hypertrophy phase, but they hated this. I'm going to change it to this, but the overall goal is the same. However, I still think that's somewhat changing the program. And if you wrote it out a certain way, it should work, right? Now, here's the thing. If you program correctly and you know your client correctly, that won't happen. If you know what motivates your client and you know what your clients like and don't like, then you shouldn't run into that problem. In other words, if I know my client hates high volume, like 10 by 10 German volume training is probably not going to be a good style of programming that I would use for them. But if I want hypertrophy, even if I think German volume would be a great thing for them, but I know they're going to hate it, I've got to figure out another way to get that hypertrophy in the manner that I want. That's going to be mentally stimulating for them and motivating for them. And if it turns out that there's only one way to get the job done, well, then I've got to convince them that I know it's going to suck, you may not like it, but trust me, this is going to get you the results you want. And it's up to you to then convince them of that. But being consistent with your programming, don't let them dissuade you or change your mind. And don't jump around because you think they're getting bored. That right there has been my biggest issue. I still every once in a while run into it. And I run into it mostly with clients that I know are really into it, that do a lot of reading on their own, that do a lot of studying and researching things themselves, and so they're very knowledgeable. If they have read 10 different ways to gain size, and then I'm using an 11th, you know, different strategy that they've never heard of, you know, and they may be skeptical. And if it's way off base from where they've ever read before, it's going to be, you know, they're going to question you until you go. So you know, obviously it's your job to convince them that this is the right way to do it, or at least the right way in this scenario, or the reason you chose this is for X, Y, and Z. But you're going to stay the course if that's what you program. Again, a little exercise here and there is okay to change if something's not working, or if you know they're just not ready for it, then maybe you switch something out. But again, probably shouldn't run into that problem if you know your clients well. Which leads us into the second big topic of the day. Not just knowing your client, but knowing your role within the session. So in-session training, we talked about in-session motivation a couple podcasts ago. And so I'm not going to talk about necessarily how to motivate someone within the session. I'm talking about knowing what your client needs from you. And again, that could be motivation. It could be the drill sergeant or the cheerleader, or like the things that we talked about to help drive that locus of control. It could be that, but I'm also talking about, you know, your ability, you know, what they need out of the session. So let me give you an example. I have clients that, I probably have 6 or 7 clients right now that don't really need my help with technique, don't really need my help with motivation in terms of coming in the gym and working hard. They don't miss sessions, they don't cancel, they don't skip, they're there every time. They don't necessarily need my motivation on or guidance on nutrition. They eat well. You might say, well, gosh, they could probably take care of themselves. And they probably could. But what they don't do for themselves is all the other little things that nobody wants to do. The accessory work, the conditioning, when to push themselves on a heavy set. I mean, most of us want to lift heavy and push that weight, but sometimes, you know, it can be heavy, it can be scary, or you can just be tired and don't feel like getting under a big heavy squat or doing it for 5 reps. Pete said 3 sets of 5. Well, I'm not feeling it, so I'll do 3 sets of 3. Okay? That's not necessarily what we want. Now, if 3 sets of 3 is all we can muster that day for a whole host of reasons, then we might have to make some adjustments on the fly because we didn't eat well, we didn't sleep well, or some other stressors in our life, or, you know, could be a whole host of reasons. But by and large, if everything else is in line in our formula, our success formula that we lay out, if everything is going well, then these clients, some of them just need me there to make sure, kind of as a facilitator with a checklist. Okay, hey, we got to get all of these reps in. Okay, no cheating on the reps, no bailing on the last set. We've got to get it all, and we've got to get all of the accessory work in. I have a new client right now. He's very strong, he's highly motivated, very organized, but to his own admission, he won't do the accessory work if I didn't write it out for him to do. And so, again, we're being smart with the conditioning. I'm not just having him run endless miles or, you know, do 1,000 burpees. I'm having him do things that are going to help him towards his overall goal, which is to get stronger, but also to lose a little bit of body fat. So the conditioning will, again, go to support whatever the main lift of the day is or the main focus of the training phase that we're in, you know, with a appropriate work to rest ratio, that sort of thing. So knowing why you're there, what your client really needs from you. And it could be, like we talked about a couple episodes ago, and I just mentioned a minute ago, that they could be that all they need is that drill sergeant. They don't mind doing the accessory work, they don't mind doing all these other things, but they just need someone to push them and to ride them so they get the most out of it. That's what they like, that's what they understand. Then I have some clients that, again, motivation is never an issue. They will work their tail off every time they're in. They'll do anything I ask them to do. They won't ever question it. They work really hard, but if left to their own devices, they would have no idea which exercises to pick, which exercises to, you know, or when to up the weights, how much to weight to increase. And again, these are all things that obviously trainers and coaches may take for granted for themselves and may seem common sense, but those are the things that most people fail at. They're like, oh, 100 pounds? Oh, that seemed pretty easy. I'll bump up to 115 for my next set. Well, that may be too big of a jump. And so it's up to us to know how to do that. Now, in all of our podcasts, I want our listeners, if you are a coach, to take something away from this and be able to learn something and practice something right away. So let's talk about that specific example for just 1 second before we move on to the final piece of the talk today. And that is, there are a multitude of ways in how to program that overload and how to change load for somebody. So we talk about progressive overload or progression in the overload principle and our 9 principles of personal training that you've heard me ramble on and on about. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. There's not just one standard way. There's many, many ways. For example, you could do a linear progression, which would have them kind of stair-stepping each week, getting a little bit more higher intensity. Maybe sets and reps are coming down as intensity goes up. You could do an undulating periodization style program. This is my preferred method, where we have a heavier day, a lighter day, and a medium day all intermixed throughout the week. So within each lift, you might be lifting heavy every day, but one day you're lifting heavy with the legs, and one day you're lifting heavy with the upper body, and you know, maybe with the back. You know, so we change it. Day one, maybe a heavy squat. Day two, you're going to do a squat, but it's going to be a much lighter squat, or another squat variation like a front squat or a lunge, a weighted lunge, something like that. But the idea being, we're taking the volume and we're spreading it out throughout the week, but we're changing the intensity so that I can still lift heavy, but I can still get enough repetition in to see change and to see the clients adapt as well. That's undulating. You could use relative intensities. Relative intensities, similar to RPE scales, rate of perceived exertion, are basic. It's a little bit more scientific way of doing it. And again, this is what I choose to do, where rather than just have an absolute increase in intensity, like 70, 74, 76, 77, you know, stair-step progression like that, it will be increased, But I don't base it off of the absolute intensity. We'll base it off the relative intensity, which is basically what does that set feel like? Or, for example, if I do three sets of five at a particular percentage, let's say 80%, that set may feel like 90%, or may have a, I won't say feels like, it will be like having the intensity of a 90% set of three or whatever. That being said, I'll increase my relative intensity percentage each week. So if that felt like 90%, now I'm going to go to 92%, which may only take me from, say, 80 to 82 or 80 to 81.5%. It may be, you know, it may not be an exact one-for-one increase. But the idea is the set will feel harder, as it should, every time. And we will ensure that our intensity is really going up, because there are instances where the sets and reps, even if you're accounting for the increased load by decreasing the reps, there are some set and rep schemes that will have the same relative intensity, even if the weight is actually heavier. And again, that's an extreme scratching of the surface of relative intensity. I could go into greater detail if you like. Please just, you know, send me a direct message, or if that sounds like something you've never heard before, let me know, and we'll go a little bit on a deeper dive. But I just kind of wanted to give you guys some thoughts here. So you've got your linear progression, undulating, RPE scales, relative intensities. Gosh, there's got to be several more. A conjugate method, where, you know, you might be lifting heavy a couple times a week, 2 to 3 times a week, but you're going to stay with a particular training modality for a couple weeks and then change it up. So I might be lifting heavy squats for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'm still going to lift heavy squats, but now instead of just a regular squat, I'm going to go a narrow stance squat for a couple weeks, or I'll go with a banded squat for a couple weeks. Anyways, the idea is I'm still training my squat motion heavy, but I'm going to change up the modality or the exact variation of which what I do. That way I can continue to train, but it still abides. I can train heavy, that is, all year round, but the variety is there, so we don't get overuse injuries, and we have enough change in modalities that our body understands, or our body has to adapt to that change. So again, there's a whole host of ways to change up that intensity and that progression. But again, knowing your client, knowing why you're there, is definitely a huge, huge piece of being successful with any program. And the reason being, if I have a client come in, and even if I'm consistent, and even if I do number three, which we'll talk about in a minute, if I don't know what the client really needs from me, and I just kind of write out a program and say, hey, you're doing great, go a little deeper on the squat, push a little harder here, and just kind of go through the motions and say the things that most trainers say, again, I may not get the most out of that training session. And we know that I'm trying to get to a particular intensity. And the reason I want to get to that intensity is because I want to have the training effect that intensity will give me. And if I don't get there, then it may still be a decent workout. We still may have made a little bit of progress, but we wouldn't have made the progress that we originally intended based on the program that we wrote. And again, knowing what your client needs from you, whether it just be when to change the exercises, when to make it heavier, or to force them to do their accessories or conditioning, whatever the case is, that's what's important right there in the session. And that's what you need to make sure that you know what your client needs from you and how to do that. And again, I didn't mean to get off on too much of a tangent about different ways of progression, but again, I always want you guys to hear something in this podcast that is usable right away. So hopefully, if you haven't heard of all those different options, go look them up, go do a little more research, or feel free to ask. I'll go into more detail. Finally, the last thing I want to talk about today, and this kind of goes back into what we talked about first, which was consistency. This is educate yourself to be able to think critically. Okay, and basically what I'm getting at is, like I said, with consistency, is we do train as trainers, we do a lot of research and we do read a lot to make sure that, you know, we have the right training tools for our clients, right? And that's huge. But the other piece to that education is so that we understand what our client needs and when to change things. So I think my biggest take home point here is, when I'm watching someone train, now this is the difference in between teaching and coaching, and this is my definition. I'm not necessarily reading a textbook here, but when I think about teaching a lift versus coaching a lift, teaching it is, you know, okay, put your feet here, have your back this way, have your hands here, your head here, and then move in this particular manner. That's how you teach a movement. How you coach a movement is when you see that being done incorrectly, or you tell them what to do and they can't do it, then you coach them how to do it, whether it be scaling it, making it easier, training a different variation, or just giving them the right cues to remember what to do each time. That's the difference between coaching and teaching. And a lot of that is critical thinking and educating yourself on how to do that properly. So the best way to do that is, you know, learning something like some kind of movement screen, whether that be like an official FMS, functional movement screen certification, or just understanding basic movement patterns and what they should look like, and when they're not there, what do you do? So at the Upstate Performance Project, the way we attack this is, again, we don't try to stifle the creativity of any of our trainers or any of our people that come and work with us or work out of our gym. We want them to be creative. However, we want everything to be somewhat consistent. Again, there's that word again. Even from trainer to trainer. So there's certain things that if you're going to work for us that we expect you to do. And one of those things is to be able to educate yourself to think critically, to be consistent. So the thought is, if I see someone with improper squatting mechanics and I know that their knee is diving in every time they push up, or more importantly, and they squat down and their knees go all over the place, that's going to tell me something. Something is not firing at the right time. Something is tight. Something is weak. That's going to give me some feedback. And it's how I use that feedback to then go through. Now, if you go back and listen to our podcast on skill breakdown, this is exactly what we're talking about. So what we do at the Upstate Performance Project is we give everybody a cheat sheet. Now, this cheat sheet is by no means an exhaustive list. It's basically saying, okay, here are the most common things you're going to see with squatting form, technique errors, or pressing, or shoulder movement, or hamstring, you know, hip mobility. All of these different things that we screen for, what are the most common problems, and what are the most common areas or things that are affected, in other words, what's tight or what's weak, and then what are some potential ways of fixing that? If it's tight, do this. If it's weak, do this. And these are all jumping off points. These are by no means, like I said, an exhaustive list or the only things you can do. But these are some jump off points that you can take and say, okay, I'm seeing this. It might be something like this. So let me do another movement or another test that would test the same thing and see if I get a similar result. And if I do, then maybe it is weak. Maybe it is just tight, as I suspected. But educating yourself on how to do that is what is going to set you apart from any other trainer that's out there that just teaches the lift. And a lot of times you'll see people teaching lifts that are throwing out some cues that aren't necessarily bad, but aren't necessarily helpful either. You know, for example, if someone's squatting and you notice they're looking down, and we know that if they look down, that can break their upper thoracic spine, which causes, you know, the lifter to pitch forward on their toes, and, you know, they might miss the squat. So my cue might be head up, head up, head up, you know, as they're coming up and they're looking down. I want them to get their head up to keep their spine straight is really what I'm after, right? Now, if I haven't established that with my client, and my client doesn't know what I mean by head up, then I might start yelling head up and they're just gonna look straight up at the ceiling. And it may not produce the same, you know, effect that I want it to. So I have to be able to not only understand what those cues mean myself as the coach, but I have to make sure that my client knows that as well. I know what I want them to do, but I've got to be able to communicate that effectively. And so again, educate yourself on how to think critically, how you're going to get your client to respond to the cues that you set up. And one cue may be different for one athlete to the next. Generally speaking, trainers will develop the same cues for the same types of errors, no matter what they're going on. But it's about making sure that your client understands what that cue is in order to execute the correction properly. But if you are, and you might see some trainers that, and hopefully you're not this way, but some trainers, as I said, will just throw out cues that they've heard other people say. You know, like you might say, push through the heels. Okay, and what do we really mean? We really mean to be back on the foot, the whole foot. Basically, that means they're out on their toes. They're pitching forward again. And so heels, is what we might yell in the moment. And that doesn't mean that I rock all the way back on my heels and bring my toes off the ground, which if someone took it literally, would be what they do. And if you have someone that's brand new, that might exactly be what happens. And so you get a coach that has heard people say, push through your heels or heels when they're squatting, and it's just something they throw out there. And I know that sounds silly, but go next time you're at the gym and you're watching your, maybe not a coach, although you could watch some coaches or some personal trainers, watch how, you know, friends cue each other. They're going to throw general things out there. They're not going to necessarily have well thought out cues with their clients. And that's okay. That's not their job. But it is your job, if you're a coach or a trainer, to not only communicate that to your client, but make sure that you know what those cues should mean and what you should be fixing when you see something go wrong. So again, educate yourself to think critically. So again, these three things today that we talked about: consistency, educating yourself to think critically, and knowing what your client needs from you, are going to make any program that you're running successful. I mean, assuming the program is written for what their goals are, of course. But having a program that's well written that should produce results, if you just give it to somebody and then do nothing with it as the trainer, you may not get that program may not yield the right results, because you're not there to help them with what they need, because they may not understand your terminology, and they may not understand what happens when something goes wrong and what to do to fix it. And again, that's where you come in. And that's why you're there. That's why they're paying you. So whatever you've programmed for them, assuming it's done correctly, will be successful if you do these three things. If you stay consistent with your program and don't program hop, if you make sure that you're addressing the needs that they have, not just training towards their goals, but addressing, you know, getting to know your client so that you can properly A, motivate them, and or properly deliver what they need, which, you know, in this case, could be a lot of different things. I mentioned progressing earlier because I think that seems to be one of the biggest questions we have. Well, I just don't know when to lift heavier or when to change the weights. Or, well, that felt easy, so I just went up more weight. And that might work for a little while, but it eventually will run out, that strategy. So, again, that's what they need help with, okay? That's what you need to educate them on. And then again, as we talked about, thinking critically, educating yourself, learning new techniques, learning new ways to cue, learning how your client responds to cues. All of these things are critical thinking skills that can make or break a training session when you're in the session. And over the course of that whole program will either make or break the program. So, Hope this was helpful, and we will see you soon.